Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
Well, you have to kind of not look away from Cairo, as conditions there seem to change with every hour. This morning, as you heard, there are clashes between pro-government supporters and pro-democracy protesters in Tahrir Square. Those clashes seem to be going on in Alexandria as well. Joining us again is Shibli Tahami, Anwar Sadat Professor for Peace and Development at the University of Maryland. Good morning again, Shibli.
Good morning to you.
Well, let's talk about these clashes. We seem to be getting a kind of unified report that the Mubarak regime has organized these pro-government supporters and arranged for them to go into Alexandria and go into Tahrir Square in Cairo and pick fights with the pro-democracy supporters. Is that your sense as well?
Well, you know, as I said, you know, it's a fluid situation. There's going to be a war of narratives. We don't know all the facts, but I have seen some coverage, TV coverage on the Arab TVs just in the past hour of some of these scenes. And to call them clashes is probably inaccurate. What happened was that groups assaulted the demonstrators in Tahrir Square and other parts, came in with stones, in some cases the demonstrators were reporting knives, but certainly you could see the stones being thrown, and it was coming only from one direction, from those. So there was an assault. It wasn't like they were just here, one demonstrator saying, you know, Mubarak should stay, another saying, you know, Mubarak should go, and they were fighting with each other. It was an organized assault. Now, that's the scene I have witnessed on TV. Some of the people among the demonstrators are saying that they've, you know, took hold of some people and actually took out their IDs, and they were security services. I don't know that for a fact. I mean, it's hard to know the situation at the moment, but it is very peculiar that it was an assault. It wasn't really a counter-demonstration. As I said earlier, I know that there are people who would like to see Mubarak stay, and beyond the security services. I mean, he does have a constituency. Whether or not that is massive, whether or not those are the kind of people who would risk their lives, it's hard to know. But it clearly changes the environment on the ground, because if you introduce violence into it and it becomes pervasive, the army may have an excuse to intervene in a way that they haven't so far. And that could change the picture dramatically.
And Shibli Tahami, you said on this program, and you alluded to it there, that Mubarak isn't one guy. He's got a constituency. What history is there? What precedent is there in Egyptian history? And Rashid Khalidi, moments ago on this program, talked about the 1952 revolution, where lower-level officers in the army were a constituency which mobilized political change in Egypt. What's the precedent for, you know, Mubarak mobilizing his patronage army, this class of bureaucrats, et cetera, to basically stand with him in opposition to the rest of the 80 million in Egypt?
Actually, there's quite a bit of precedent, and not just in Egypt, but in most authoritarian places. When there are demonstrators demonstrating against governments, but don't seem to be threatening, and people assume the regime is going to stay, typically regimes have far more influence, because people know they have to deal with them afterwards in mobilizing a large demonstration. So this is not new that they can do that. In this environment that has shifted, it's all about betting. You're trying to make a bet. Is he going to stay? Is he going to go? What side are you going to be on? And it's all about betting. And I think in the past week, obviously, the betting moved in favor of the demonstrators succeeding, you know, at least in getting Mubarak out. In the last couple of days, is the betting changing a little bit? I don't know. I mean, this is something that, now, pertaining to 1952, it is an interesting example, in the sense that you did have the colonels who did it, and I think in the current environment in Egypt, the military institution is obviously central. But if you had to look at it in terms of the organization, no question that the very top echelons including Defense Minister Tantawi, including Omar Suleiman, now the vice president who comes out of the military. Those are people who are part and parcel of the regime. They're very good friends of Mubarak. They're not going to throw him to the wolves. And then the middle level have always been professional. These are very well-trained officers who are taught to be very professional. And the rank and file, my assessment is, highly sympathetic to the public. They're of the public. And so, obviously, if there's a confrontation, all of that is going to be tested, if the military institution ends up firing on the crowd in any shape or form. And they don't want to get into that. And not only because they don't want to test the loyalties within the ranks, but they also don't want to, you know, sully the reputation among the Egyptian people in preparation for what they know will be a new era, no matter what happens in the next few months. And they want to have a place in that new regime when it develops, and they don't want to weaken and shake the Egyptian confidence in that institution.
Well, Shibli Tahami of the University of Maryland, I'm wondering, you know, some of Mubarak's strongest allies outside of Egypt, Israel, Jordan, Saudi Arabia, have been conspicuously silent for the most part, and they have not come down on whether he should go or stay. And I'm wondering, this kind of violence, these kind of clashes are exactly what other Arab world leaders have been concerned about. Will violence in Cairo and in Alexandria cause other leaders to come forward and take a stand?
Well, you know, I think some of them have. I mean, I think it's incorrect to say that they haven't taken them. For one thing, I think the Prime Minister of Israel actually has been very supportive of Mubarak and behind the scenes actually trying to figure out ways to bolster him. Muammar Gaddafi, you know, when the Tunisian events happened, as you know, spoke out, and then he got shut down by all of the reaction, and I think hasn't spoken as much about these events. So I think primarily the rest of the governments in the region are nervous. They know that their own publics are rooting for the demonstrators in Egypt. And if they were to take a stand at a time when they don't want to go against the public, it'll make them, you know, it'll make it tough on them. And I doubt that they're going to, you know, stick their neck out at this point.
But at the same time, the idea of unrest, whether it's sponsored by the Mubarak regime or not, that's a matter of concern. Netanyahu is allowing Egypt to send its army into the Sinai for this very reason, to try and tamp down possible unrest.
Well, Israel has a lot to lose, I think, more than anything. In fact, I wrote a piece in the New York Times yesterday saying that, predicting that anyway future Israelis will see, you know, will consider Netanyahu, Prime Minister Netanyahu, to have lost Egypt.
On how
I don't mean he's responsible for losing it, but I mean in terms of the fact that now if Egypt does change, and it has already changed
we'll have to leave it there. It could have dire consequences for Israel. That's Shibli Tahami, an Anwar Sadat professor at the University of Maryland. I'm Celeste Headlee.
I'm John Huckaberry. This is The Takeaway.